There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And away we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. Where is here? Here is at Mobile Bay Coins, where we are doing the show live. Would love for you to come by and visit with us today. Not only are we doing the show, that should be part of what brings you in here, but how about some Jersey Mike subs from Jersey Mike's on Dolphin Street? Thank you to them and our friends here at Mobile Bay Coins, like Angelo, who are going to be able to show you cool stuff. I know that some things to me are maybe more exciting than others, but I got to tell you, I'm fired up. This coin we're looking at, the one you had talked about in the past with me, we're looking at shipwreck coins right now here in the store.
Right, and this one is from a shipwreck from 1641. So a lot of times people talk about pirate treasure and old Spanish coins,
right,
old coins from South America. And back in the day, if you can sort of envision this, they didn't have all the cool equipment and technology we do nowadays. They would pour molten silver into the sand, cut out chunks of it, and weigh it up until it weighed right on a balance scale, old school balance scale.
Uh-huh.
And then they would literally take it and hammer an anvil, hammer it down flat into sort of a coin shape, and then put the dies, top and bottom, on it and stamp it down and make a coin. It was basically a big burly guy beating on metal. That's how they made coins.
Okay, so because I'm looking at this, Angelo, and that helps.
And it's ugly.
Well, it's kind of cool looking.
I think it's cool, you know, because I'm a coin guy, but at the same time, it's not beautiful, round,
right. Well,
symmetrical
I can see the circular stamp there, but of course the edges are asymmetric, you know, kind of ragged there, but that's what you said. So that was like the slug, then they...
The slug that they hammer down, and then they stamp it out and make it a coin. Sometimes they're a little off-center, because this guy was just, that's his job all day long, pounding on, like a blacksmith, basically.
Right.
Constantly just pounding on gold and silver metal all day long.
Do you know, okay, with this shipwreck and the history of this shipwreck, was this going back to Spain? Was this leaving
correct.
The New World and going back to Spain?
Correct. Most of the time, what was going on back in the day was...
So they wouldn't do it in ingots, they'd make the actual coins and then send those back to Spain.
They did a little of both. They actually did make some silver bars and silver ingots, most of which they struck as coins, though, had to do with a little bit of their legal rights and how it was protected and things like that. They had legal issues even back in the day, so they would make, you know, barrels and casks and treasure chests full of these gold or silver coins, load these up on the ships, and then get them back to Spain, get them back to Portugal, get them back to, you know, the old world from
right.
the new world. And in this case, the ship was overloaded, it was leaking, it had some maintenance issues. Sounds like a typical ship to
yeah.
me.
<That's right. laughs>
So, overloaded to maintenance
right.
issues.
Right.
So they get caught up in a storm, they get caught on a reef, you know, all of a sudden they're grounded on a reef, and it's in the Abrojos.
Yeah.
You know, they call it the Silver Shoals, is what it's called now. For some strange reason, because there's a whole boatload of silver dumped into the sand.
So this was found on the bottom. This was found in that ship.
Correct. And the first time that they actually went and recovered some of the silver was in the late 1600s. The wreck happened in 1641. Late 1600s, somebody from England says, I got to find me some silver, and they actually found some. And then it was years and years later that they found it again. But the ship's officers actually got onto the longboat and escaped, got off the, you know, they survived.
The sinking ship, yeah.
Left everybody else stranded there on the reef.
I say, the captain's supposed to be the last to leave. He goes down with the ship.
I think he was the last one leaving as he was waving goodbye to his guys, unfortunately. But they lost over 300 people
wow.
on that wreck. And again, 1641, they didn't have any technology like we have nowadays. So you think about it, that had to be a scary darn thing. You don't know where in the world you're shipwrecked on. You're on a reef, and there is no chance of rescue at that point.
All right, so this came from the bottom of the ocean, and now it's sitting here
at Mobile
Bay Coins.
Absolutely. We bought several of those. I've only got two of those left out of the grouping that we bought. And there are a lot of people that just absolutely love shipwreck coins and coins with stories like that. So even if you can't budget that and buy that today, you got to come by and check it out. It is just an amazing coin with an amazing story behind it.
Yeah, and I want people to come by and look at this. But let's talk about just buying silver because you know you were talking about what a deal gold is right now, but you had taught me in the past that if gold's a deal, then silver
is even more so.
Yeah, is even more. Is that still true?
It certainly is. Right now, silver is still holding below $15 an ounce. We have a lot of old U.S. silver dollars, so Morgan dollars, Peace dollars, a lot of the junk silver coins. So if you sort of want to collect coins, but you really just want to look for deals in silver, since silver is so inexpensive right now,
right?
Come by the shop, look at the junk silver coins. Again, they're solid silver coins, 90% silver U.S.
It's
coins.
Just Can we say they're not fancy?
They're not as fancy, as pretty as some of the other ones. But you can go through the buckets and maybe find some dates for some coins you need for your collection, or maybe just find some older stuff that's a little cooler and a little better condition to you, just not enough for us to raise the price on and sell as a collectible piece.
All right, so people can buy and do that right now. Obviously, there's a lot of margin there, because I know just me not watching it like you, but I've seen silver prices lots higher than that.
They have certainly been significantly higher. As a matter of fact, I was sort of bemoaning some of the silver I bought when silver was $36 an ounce, and I thought it was a good deal at the time, because it was even higher prior to that. You know, under $15 an ounce is pretty much unheard of. It's the lowest it's been literally in years, so it's definitely a good time to come by.
Obviously, yeah, time to buy, get that deal. And while they're here, too, what else you want to check out? We want to look at some jewelry, of course, the Opinel knives.
The Opinel knives, as you know and love, the jewelry. It's a great time to come by and check things out. We have new inventory coming in every single day, so if you're looking for a gift that you need right now because it's urgent, or maybe you're somebody that's not like me and you want to plan ahead, come by and check out the selection right now. You might see something that strikes you, buy it, pick it up, put it away until you need that gift.
That's right. That's thinking ahead and being prepared. All right. Well, I appreciate it. We're going to hang out for the next couple hours here and keep us in the loop what's going on. 2204 Government Street. Explain that to folks. What does that mean? Where is that?
So we're in Midtown. We are just west of the railroad tracks there at the Loop. We're just east of the park, or just east of Whataburger, if you want to look at it
That's right. I do.
And they can always see the big old FM Talk van right there in front of the shop and pull on in. And if it's packed up front, cut down the side. You can park in back and walk around front.
All right, good stuff. Y'all come by and say hello. And Angelo, we will check back with you very, very soon.
Sounds good.
See this coin. This is really cool stuff. All right, coming up on today's show, we've got a lot to do over the next couple hours. And this is going to be good, because I have, number one, my friend Jeff Poor, usually I would say in studio, but he's in remote studio with me here at Mobile Bay Coins. Hey, man.
Hey, thanks for having me in.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And then we've got Brendan Kirby coming by. Killer Bees will join us here in the 1 o'clock hour. He's got a comedy show going on Friday, but he's got this show. I have not seen the show. Yeah, I just tell you ahead of time, but I know that two people that I work with there at the station talk about this Moonshiners TV show on Discovery that he has been working with. We're going to find out more about that coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. And, of course, Jeff, with what has happened, we're talking about it this morning, a whole slew of things to talk about here when it comes to the Manafort trial. Talked about Cohen pleading guilty. Not a good day for the president, for sure.
No, and no matter how people look at it and try to say there's some way to get a positive out of it, it's just another headache, another ordeal. It may have could have been worse, but I don't
that's
think
not a nice. Either. Well, it could have been worse. It's not good, though.
But yeah. I will say this: I don't think it's the death blow. I don't think it's the end of the Trump administration. There's a lot of people on cable news today saying this is the beginning of the end. I think that's an exaggeration.
Well, they've said that how many times on this is why I kind of I would be slow to pass any judgment. It's been the death blow to 15 times.
It's your AAA worst travel weekend ever narrative, right?
Right. It's the same old story.
It's the same old. So I don't think this is the end of the Trump presidency. I think there's a lot of other things that will come into play before November. Here we are, August 22nd. So,
right, but that's the question. Not the death blow for Trump, but by proxy, what does this mean for Republicans in the midterms? We come back and we'll talk more about that. Hey, we're live at Mobile Bay Coins. Come out and say hello. We'll feed you some sandwiches from our friends at Jersey Mike's on Dolphin Street, plus the brand-new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers. We've got those. Auburn football getting ready to start on September 1st. We got your Auburn Huggers as well. Stop by and see us. We'll be here till 2.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and glad to have you along. It is Midday Mobile live from Mobile Bay Coins, 2204 Government Street. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit there. That's a sign that we're right inside. So you come on in, and I say we, a whole bunch of us from the station, plus our buddy Jeff Poor is in, which, by the way, Jeff is one of the names there on our ESPN bracket. You feel pretty good about your chances against the rest of us here this year?
If anybody wants to play against Jeff Poor, more power to them.
Very good. We'll talk more about that, but the link is up. If you think you can pick some college football against us, then you're probably right. If you want to say you can pick it against me, you'll probably win. Sign up for that. We'll talk more about that coming up. Mentioned in a little bit, Brendan Kirby is going to join us. We'll talk about a couple things, continue this conversation Jeff and I are having about the situation now for President Trump. But in addition, I want to talk about the history of Admiral Sims and the statue that stands right here in our city. We'll get to that in just a little bit. All right. You said bad day, but not the end as prognosticated on Morning Joe and other shows today for President Trump.
No, because they've been beating that drum for the last 2.5 years. You know, I think it goes way back to when John McCain, what he said about John McCain. That was the beginning of the end.
Right, because I remember back then going, well, you can't say that and not
Teflon
you can't survive
Don
that.
Just
yeah.
Keeps on kind of plodding along, right? So if he survives these things, they got to figure, if you're a Democrat, you got to figure out a way to separate Trump from his base. I don't know what that is. I'm not really sure what that is.
Right, because they're not saying, I mean, Pelosi even, they're not saying impeachment.
No, well, they're afraid to, because it's a double-edged sword. Now, there's some Democrats that think that will get people to turn out to vote in the midterms, but there are also some people that think that it'll do the opposite, that it'll get Republicans to turn out, because it'll look like they're trying to take a presidential election away from the public.
Right, that their choice is now being, through some method, their choice has now been taken away from them.
Somebody decided, right, yeah. And that's how it can be painted. And that energizes a you know, kind of already a rabid base, you know, that Trump has. Do we need to, like, the word we kept using this morning is this rocket fuel word, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you keep throwing these things, and they keep escalating. Well, right. You only want one side to really escalate. And I think that the impeachment word kind of gets both sides really kind of on high alert.
Gotcha. So the Dems, you're saying the Dems' challenge is how to get their people motivated to do something without at the same time motivating President Trump's base.
Right. And what you know, like, what do you, how do you approach that if you're trying to dispirit Trump's base? I you know, it's going to have to be something really bad, like really more epic, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's plausible. If that hasn't happened yet, I mean, maybe, you know, we've heard the Omarosa stuff and the
right.
rumors of an N-word tape and,
right.
and things like that, but what how do you, you know, what else is there out there? And they've thrown everything at this guy, but he just keeps continuing. And I'm, you know, we're getting down to crunch time if you're a Democrat. You're supposed to win the midterm.
Right,
you're supposed to take the Congress back. This is supposed to be like 2010 was for Obama.
It always happens.
2018 is supposed to be that for Trump.
Yeah.
It's not looking that way. You see some of these resistance rallies, but they're nothing
but
like the Tea Party,
you don't feel that the Democrats
right?
are going to take control of the House? I think that's, I mean, there's
I think it's 50-50 shot. I don't think it's a sure thing. There's a lot of people that think the math's not there. I will say this about midterm elections. Traditionally, since 2006 being the exception, Republicans have way outperformed Democrats in turnout. That's
sure.
why...
Yes.
That's why they can't win a presidential election, but they can win these midterm elections that don't
right.
seem as important.
Right.
Because
yeah.
Republicans tend to vote in these elections because
they're not regular voters where
right, they're not the big publicized things where you do the Rock the Vote MTV
right,
thing and all
right.
these things. So that plays well into Republicans' hands, but they got to have Democrats got to have something to balance that out. Is it this Russia stuff? But we've been hearing about that for the last 2 years.
Right.
Is it this new, like, the new Cohen-Manafort angle? I don't know. They just,
well, okay,
they're desensitized to it at
okay,
this point.
But now, what about this? You were talking about that it really may not affect the president, but I asked you about this. What does it mean in the midterms, right? And what does it mean, and what does this mean for collateral damage? Is there collateral damage for people that aren't Donald Trump?
Right.
I mean, if
the Republicans
out there. A Republican running somewhere in the midterm that wasn't even there, And now all of a sudden, they're going to take the punishment for it.
The Martha Roby and Burley Bird types
right.
are willing to jump off of that ship and not going to hang out on Billy Bush weekend types, right? So I don't know if there may be. It doesn't seem to me that, though, because think about it. Look at this whole cycle, at least in Alabama and a little bit in Florida. But if you're a Republican, pretty much in a lot of the places in the country, you're running with Donald Trump. You want the wall. You're,
oh, Lord knows, yeah. Well, that's
you know, you're Twinkle cycle. Kavanaugh 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot
mm-hmm.
of that, and I think that I know that's true in Florida as well.
Right.
And did we ever see that with George W. Bush? Did you ever see people? I'm, you know, maybe a little after 9/11. We want to keep the country safe, but there was not this trying to be this mirror image of the president, right?
Right. Right. Yeah. And it's not the
was there even that of Barack Obama? There are people of the Democratic Party afraid to roll with Barack Obama because of some of the Obamacare
sure.
stuff. So I think you've got to, if you're going to get at Trump, you've got to kind of take that component away. And none of this is really convincing me that that's really where this is heading. It doesn't seem that way. It just seems like deep state, you know, mainstream media doing these things.
It's not going to motivate. Okay, so that makes sense. That maybe why the House doesn't go to the Democrats. But you talked about something during the break that I hadn't even thought of. That maybe where the pound of flesh is extracted from this is not in a midterm election, but in a Senate confirmation.
Yeah, the hope is that they can put enough public pressure, enough media pressure, to say, hey, we don't need Donald Trump with all this cloud of, you know, whatever's going on, all these suspicious things. We don't need him picking our Supreme Court justice. And that seems to be the best, you know, recourse they have for this. They don't really have a they're afraid to play the impeachment card, but if they could get Kavanaugh, you know, maybe get that delayed a little, maybe, you know, at best they could hope for it to happen after the election.
Get it delayed as in a punishment, or get it delayed as in they think that
we
don't take the House and you know, somehow some enough influence in the Senate that they will be able to prevent it.
Right. Well, the idea is on the surface they're going to say, well, we don't think it's a good idea that Trump be nominating the, you know, such an important post with this cloud of you know, bad things surrounding him with all these improprieties. We think that we need to wait. We think we need to go. It's run out the clock. And this gives them another reason to run out the clock and not have to go vote on Brett Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court justice, because this really is like the court is everything right now.
Sure it is.
I would argue it's more important than this midterm. These midterms change every 2 years. Right? I mean, these Congress could change every 2 years. We're talking generations here of a swing vote.
And there are a lot of people that came out and voted for Trump that did it for the reason of the court.
Yeah, and that would continue to be the case, because all of a sudden we have the court back on the front burner, and you got to vote for Republicans in the midterms if you want to continue.
That's how I would sell it from a strategy.
You take that to the Never Trump side. You take that to the Quinn Hilliers.
That's right.
And you take that to all these Bill Kristols and all these types of people, and you say, look, are you going to put the court Jeopardy? We're this close.
Right, right.
And you've been out there pushing for Kavanaugh. Well, part of that component is you got to support your president, your Republican president, because they need to be backed when it comes to getting Republicans elected, and that's a big deal.
So, I mean, and you make a good case for it, but you got to think about, so a national political debate is boiling down to the confirmation of one Supreme Court justice. I mean, that's a lot of weight on the shoulders. You know, there's a lot at play. It's not just... You know, there's a lot of fundraising to be done.
I would
done,
say just
and there's a lot of
just Brett Kavanaugh. Let's look at the other justices on the court.
Let's just say Brett Kavanaugh. That's what I'm saying. It's on his shoulders.
But there are other you can use this talking point.
Oh, to say, but you can say this is the first line. If we don't do this here, we won't even get this.
Yeah. Well, you're going to need this later on as well.
Sure.
You need a Republican Senate. Forget about what's going on in the White House and all this drama. But it doesn't help if you're going to bash Trump. It's going to make it harder for Republicans to succeed in the midterms.
Who fundraises more on this, Democrats or Republicans?
Democrat,
I hate to be so cynical.
The Democrat fundraise has been terrible. At least the committees, Republican National Committee is out fundraising Democrats this cycle. So
Which is, I mean, we've brushed by it a couple of times, but people who don't watch this all the time, generally the idea is whatever party's not at the White House has an advantage, has a two-touchdown advantage going into the midterm.
Now, they would argue...
10
would,
points, at least.
Yeah, they would argue that their fundraising or their grassroots is all in this, you know, the Million Woman March kind of resistance stuff and all these things, other things going on, and that they're not really pumping money into a political structure like the DNC. And that's the argument. I would say I think there's a lot of dysfunction in the Democratic National Committee. I think there's a lot of weird things going on that we're not really talking about. It's not a main story, and that's why they're struggling to really fundraise off of any of this stuff. I know I get bombarded with RNC emails, and I'm on all these lists.
Right.
And you see them, you know, just touting their fundraising numbers. They're not doing that on the Democratic side. It's Russia, 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 Russia. And you also have a lot of other things going on, people focusing on individual races in some of these states, like Florida, it's Gwen Graham, or, you know, it's Bill Nelson. In these places, they're focusing on the individual candidates, where the Republicans kind of got, right now, we want to back Trump at all costs message going, and they're not as micro-targeted.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about the next step here. So with Manafort, you got another federal hearing, what, on the other 10
yeah,
counts?
Yeah, on the 10
count, counts or something.
There's another set of charges that are going to be tried in the D.C. court system. Yeah. This Virginia court case was separate, so it's over with. I think it's got like a week or so until that gets underway.
Okay.
So that narrative continues on.
Okay, so there's that track going on. The Cohen thing.
I think the Cohen thing is, well, first of all, they got Lanny Davis out there kind of running around doing, you know, being the face of it. I'm not sure that's the best move, but he's a Clinton operative. He knows his way around these TV studios, and it becomes, I think it's less about his legal expertise and more about how they are able to politicize it, and maybe that's where he wins it for his client.
All right. Of course, we'll talk more about this when we return. Also, our buddy Brendan Kirby is joining us next. We'll talk more about this and the history of that statue right there at the foot of Government Street.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Mobile Bay Coins, 2204 Government Street. You'll see the FM Talk 106.5 mobile command unit, but we've even gone more mobile, and we are inside the shop right now with Ron, Angelo, Nancy, Anna, the whole group, the dogs, and of course, those coins. And we'll talk more about this, whether they're shipwreck coins or collectibles from the last 50 years. And even Roman coins they had around here. Listen, you got to see those. And of course, Open L Knives we talk about. Come check out the items that Angelo and I are always talking about. You can do it in person right here at Mobile Bay Coins today. While you're here, we'll feed you a sandwich from Jersey Mike Subs on Dolphin. Thank you so much. And the FM Talk 106.5 Huggers. The new run is out, plus our classic Auburn Huggers as you're getting ready for football starting on September 1st. You can stop by and grab those. Once again, 2204 Government Street. It is Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore hanging out with us, and Brendan Kirby. I got both of you guys in Mobile Bay Coins on the same day. I have accomplished something. Hey, man, thanks for coming by.
Good afternoon.
So you saw the van, made it easy to find the location.
It's like the homing beacon. Yeah.
That's right. That's what we're here for. I want to get into a story you have up about about that statue.
Sure.
That sits here at the foot of Government Street. But before we do, I want to get a little more, especially having the two of y'all here, to bounce this back. A bad day for President Trump.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no way to spin that. I do agree with Jeff on the ultimate conclusion as to what this means for Trump. The Manafort conviction doesn't really have anything to do with him. Whatever political damage that's done has been done. The Cohen thing is more serious because it's the first one of these legal proceedings that touches Trump directly. But when it comes down to it, there's a DOJ regulation that says a sitting president can't be charged. So the Justice Department is not going to charge President Trump with a crime. The remedy is impeachment.
Right, and it doesn't seem like there's
any. And that is a political proceeding. So in a political proceeding, I look at the politics. And as long as Trump has an approval rating among Republican voters in the 85-90% range, there's no way the Senate is going to come up with two-thirds majority to remove a president over a campaign finance violation. So that's just sort of the politics of impeachment. So, you know, all these predictions, you know, this is Trump's over. Trump will leave office when he gets defeated for re-election, or if he wins re-election, 4 years later when he leaves office like any other president. So that's sort of where I agree with Jeff. Where I disagree is on the midterm elections. I mean, all signs point to a pretty bloody year for Republicans.
But not a bloody year like in the sense it was in 2010 for Obama.
Well, maybe 2006. To me, it feels a lot like 2006 for Democrats.
What metrics? A guy like me doesn't know the stuff y'all know.
Sure.
Let's look at
first of all, let's look at the president's approval rating, which is not high. You know, it's in the low 40s. You get an occasional poll that has him up kind of near 50%, but for the most part, it's high 30s, low 40s. You go back and look at all the midterm elections where the president has been that unpopular. It hasn't just been a loss for the president's party. It's been a big loss. So that one right there. Factor number two is congressional retirements. A whole lot of congressional Republicans are not running for re-election.
Right.
And very few Democrats are. That means the Republicans have a lot of open seats to defend, and that makes it harder. It's easier to win a race when you have an incumbent. That's factor number two. Factor number three would be, you talk about fundraising, just right, the Democratic National Committee is a mess, and the Republican National Committee is a well-oiled machine at this point. But if you look at how the candidates themselves are doing, Democrats are raising a lot of money, and there's a lot of races where Democratic challengers at this point have raised more money than Republican incumbents. That ought to be a warning sign. I don't know whether... It's a chicken egg argument. Are they raising the fact that they raise that money? Does that mean they're going to be competitive, or are they raising that money because they're already competitive? It really doesn't matter in the end if you're a Republican strategist trying to hold on to the House. So those three, and then I look at the polling, so-called generic ballot. What party should control Congress? The Democrats have a pretty big advantage at this point on that. It's sort of in the range where it was in 2006.
Let me just throw in the every guy thing. Polling after 2016, I don't know quite what to believe when it comes to polling.
Well, the polling gets much maligned in 2016, but it wasn't really as wrong as people think it was. But we have this idea that the polls were way off because the result was wrong, but these were national samples of a national audience, and the national polling average, the Real Clear Politics average, said Hillary Clinton had about a 3-point advantage, and she won the national vote by about 2 points. That's right within the margin of error. The result was wrong because there were a bunch of close states that went for Trump and won the Electoral College.
But that's the problem we run into here. There's two things. The Senate map doesn't line up for Democrats. They're playing defense. So
Senate's going to be harder.
So Senate's going to be really hard. I don't think they get the Senate. Look over what's going on in Florida. They're going to lose a seat over there, it looks like.
Well, I mean, take a look at the Senate. Look at the individual races. If you told me that the biggest pickup opportunity for Republicans would be Florida, 6 months ago, I would have said you're crazy. But that looks like that's the best shot. All these other Republican targets, Montana, I think Republicans have written that off. I think John Tester is going to win that easily. In West Virginia, Joe Manchin is doing very well against his Republican opponent. And that was one that Republicans figured was almost a gimme. Claire McCaskill is beatable, but it's not a slam dunk. Same for Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota. And meanwhile, Dean Heller is in big trouble for the Republicans in Nevada. The open Senate seat in Arizona to replace Jeff Flake is looking very bad for Republicans. And there have been polls that have shown the Republican candidate losing in Tennessee. I mean, the Senate may well be a wash.
In Tennessee?
Marsha Blackburn's not going to lose that race.
She may well win it. O'Rourke in Texas has had polling that's close to Ted Cruz. Now, I don't think he's going to beat Ted Cruz. But the point is, there are... Senate races that are much closer than anyone would have thought, that Republicans are defending, and meanwhile, these Democratic seats in these red states, the polling hasn't been so good on. That doesn't mean they're not going to win them, but it's not the slam dunk I think people thought it was going to be a year ago.
And the second thing, when you talk about these polls, just back to his point, even if the polls are right, it's a generic ballot of like sort of national voters.
Mm-hmm.
You got to look at it a little deeper than that. I think this is going to be the same way it played out for Trump. When you start looking at these individual congressional districts, and you can't really do the generic ballot thing in those things because everything's different. So you have a lot of people in New York and L.A. that are just way outspoken against Trump and whatever, but then you get in the middle of the country, and it's not quite that gap. There's not quite that gulf. I think I think just where the pockets of the quote-unquote resistance are really skew these national ballots and these generic ballots, and they don't really paint a clear picture of what's really going to happen in November.
Well, then you can look at the actual election results we've had in all these special elections. Now, I didn't put a lot of stock in some of these special election races that happened right after the presidential election, but the closer they get to Election Day, the more meaningful I think they become, and we have a mass of results now that, for the most part, Republicans have barely won in a bunch of these places where, you know, Trump won by double digits. And in the case in Pennsylvania, they actually lost that seat. That doesn't mean that every single seat is going to shift to that degree. But if you're fighting to hang on to the 12th district in Ohio, which has voted for a Democrat once in 50 years, you know,
but
that's not good
people
time.
Turn out. So this is something that Jeff was saying earlier, and I, you know, that has been true for time, that midterms have been a lot better for in general, even though usually the way the pendulum swings, whoever's got the White House, the other party, yeah, does well in the midterms. But Republicans turn out better in midterms, and Democrats turn out better in presidential years. Correct? Is that fair?
Well, I mean, that's been the conventional wisdom.
Across the board.
And
I mean, obviously, there's always
There is some truth to that. You know, Republican voters tend to be, you know, older, more reliable across the board voters.
Right.
And the Democratic base
The Democrats
younger
right now,
voters aren't as reliable.
Yeah, okay. And would the Democrats be more vocal right now? Those voices than usual, party leadership, people that are trying to get attention out there for the Democrats, they're going to be more vocal because, you know, their ox has been gored and they're, you know, they want their place back. Does that mean they have the grassroots behind them? Is it this thing? Listen, in 2015, I'd had no question that the logic would have been solid, but, you know, like, do those people, the people that showed up in the Rust Belt states, and those do they show up so big for Republicans? Because, like Jeff said earlier, the rallying cry is not something that's as nuanced as this midterm. You know, it's President Trump's agenda. I mean, I guarantee you they're going to run. How many times around here are they running on the fact that they're just like President Trump? They're there for the agenda. They're not running on, hey, I'm going to be the best senator for, you know, the state of Iowa. It's like, I'm going to be there for President Trump, and that gets people to the polls.
Right, or I'm going to be there to oppose President Trump.
Right, on the Democrat side, too. Yeah.
If you look at, you know, the years where the party out of power has done well, it's usually a combination of they do better with independents than typical, and there's a turnout differential, either because there's a surge on your side or because the other side is depressed a little bit. And it just look at it this way. This is one way to look at the map. There's like 23 or 24 House seats with a Republican congressman that Hillary Clinton won in the 2016 election. So if you're a Democrat, all you have to do is win those seats, win the seats that Hillary already won, and then you've got it. And that, again, that doesn't mean they're going to win every single one of those races, but you know, there's a lot of defense that the Republicans are playing, and you can pick maybe a half a dozen Democratic-held seats that look like, you know, potential flips for the Republicans,
right.
but not nearly as many. And by the way, you know, you have two incumbent Republican congressmen now that have been indicted for crimes.
And we'll get to that.
The whole culture of corruption argument that works so well for the Democrats in 2006.
Grab that when we get back. We are live from Mobile Bay Coins, Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile live from Mobile Bay Coins, 2204 Government Street. And Angelo has got us hooked up with all kind of coins. We'll talk more about the shipwreck coins. Also, I'm looking at Mobile's 250th anniversary coin set as well. You know, when you're a 300-year-old city, you got a chance to have a lot of people on coins, and we'll get to that. Plus, Killer Bees joins us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk about what's going on and the new season of Moonshiners on the Discovery Channel. We'll do that here in just a couple minutes. But it's a treat to have both Jeff Poore and Brendan Kirby sitting here and bouncing these ideas back and forth about what if you're a fair person, I don't care where you come at it politically, President Trump had a bad day. It was a bad day.
Right.
And there's no spin to say, oh, this is the three-dimensional chess. I got one of those texts this morning.
They're all falling into Trump's
I got that
right?
this morning. I got that text this morning, and I'm sorry. At a certain point, I mean, you have people here that are, you know, are very open-minded and would, you know, will give President Trump every chance possible. And you got three people sitting here going, it was not a good day. Don't tell me it's three-dimensional chess.
He's got him just where he wants.
Yeah. I got that. Get this text from the text line. Matt says, with respect to both Jeff and Brendan, our guy is cooked. Too much is piling up on him that even the Republicans will be forced to take action. That is Matt texting us from Mobile. So what's y'all's take on that, Jeff?
I think Republicans are afraid to really go against Trump at this moment in time.
Yeah, will there be that point? Who will be the first, you know, if there is a
Yeah, that's where Nixon lost it. When he started losing the support of Republicans, that's when it was all downhill from him. Right now, though, everything's so galvanized. Everybody's at their battle stations. If one of these Republicans turned, it wasn't like a Jeff Flake or Bob Corker or whatever, that all of a sudden just changes and comes out really vocally against Trump, then maybe that's the break in the dam. But it's also, on the other side of that, it could be political suicide for you if you were to do something like that.
Right, yeah, the first person to step out, they either become a hero or they become, you know, the spoils of war, and they're laying on the battlefield.
Right, and they get primaried or they get castigated by their side, you know, the talk radio crowd, the Fox News crowd all go after them. I think that's a risky calculation. I don't know what that point is, though. Where does that happen? Where do you start seeing the dam break for Trump?
It's not a coincidence that the Republican politicians who have been most critical of Trump are ones who are leaving office. Yeah, you know, Bob Corker, Jeff Flake. They're not running.
But
for
that's
re-election.
What Jeff said. It's not those
they're
people.
Free to say.
Who would
John
be
McCain,
the first?
You know, won't be running.
But who would be the first Brutus? You know what I'm saying? Who would be the first one that was? And like, I don't think that's. I don't think that's coming at this point. I'm just reading what Matt said on the text.
In the Nixon case, you know, Howard Baker and other senior Republicans went to the White House and said, you got to resign because you've lost the support of Congress. You know, let's say Mitch McConnell led a delegation over to Trump to try that now. Do you think Trump would listen to him? Trump wouldn't listen to them. Trump would burn the whole house down with him if he had to. And this is what I think Paul Ryan, you know, is about. I don't think Paul Ryan ever really warmed to Trump. But
no, I think that's a fair statement.
But he figures, look, what can I do about it? You know, I mean, to the extent that Trump has been helpful in advancing, you know, the Republican agenda, i.e. Paul Ryan's agenda, you know, I think, you know, Ryan has decided he's made that bargain and we're going to do it. And to the extent that Trump, you know, tweets things and does things that break norms, you know, I think Paul Ryan would stop it if he could, but publicly complaining about it wouldn't actually stop the behavior and would just hurt the agenda he's trying to advance. So people scratching their heads, why is Paul Ryan? That's why Paul Ryan's behaving that way, because you know, you're not going to stop Trump by, like, telling him, you know, you can't do that.
Right.
But you listen to the Morning Joe crowd, and they're just pleading with Republicans, somebody to step up and be that person. I don't know who that person is. I don't think that person's out there, or they are out there. They're keeping their mouth shut.
So. Well, that person would be someone who's decided that he's had enough in elective office and wants to be a pundit on MSNBC.
Those kinds of people. But let's just look at the people that would do it that aren't looking to advance their post-electoral career. And Ted Cruz tried to fight this fight, lost badly. Mike Lee, obviously. You look around the country, and I don't know who that person would be, and I can't see what it would. Maybe it would take a local issue or something to really turn the tide on Trump. But to me, there's just not that sort of movement.
This is as cliched as saying the old rule, but the old rules are out, right? Because the things that every time we thought would be, like I say, I mean, I was guilty of that in the beginning. The things I thought that would be the undoing of Trump, are not, right? And in this situation, a wise Republican, like you just said, I mean, number one, they don't think saying anything is going to change what he does. And number two, thinking that it's going to play out the way the old rule book says, oh, well, you know, there's this much weight, and then the president, then something breaks, something buckles. We've seen it in the past.
Well, and there's also, there are all these norms and conventions that, you know, people in both parties have obeyed for many, many decades that the rest of the American public weren't really let in on, right? And to me, a classic example is this business with the security clearances, right? So Trump yanks John Brennan's security clearance, and everyone erupts in just, you know, I mean, how dare you? You can't do that. This isn't done, you know.
Except for people
regular people, I think, are surprised that John Brennan even still had a security clearance. So to them, them, it's just not that big a deal. Yeah. You know, and then obviously people who hate Trump anyway, anything they can grab onto is one more reason to hate him. That's fine. But, you know, that is, I think that's why that doesn't penetrate as much. Because, and that's just, it's the disconnect between, you know, living in this political bubble where everyone's playing by the same rules, and then you have, you know, Trump come along and he just throws that out.
But we are talking about something too that says, you know, does campaign finance reform, I mean campaign finance violation, rally people? You know what I'm saying? Is that something that will have Democrats? I mean, obviously they don't think they can do much with it in the form of impeachment, right?
Well,
and,
you know,
and that's talking about people don't understand that. Like, they don't understand why Brennan would have still had clearance. You start talking about campaign finance violations, most people say, I don't get it. Why, you know?
You know, I mean, I think that, look, I mean, you had the president's former lawyer went in the court and confessed to a crime and said that he did it at the direction of Trump. I mean, there's no way around that. That's a,
right, no,
that's
I'm not
a
saying,
bad thing.
No, but agreed it's bad, but I think the nuance of, like, why can't you, like, if you give money, if he's spending money but it's not correct, you know, directly coming out of a campaign account.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you the irony of this is a couple decades ago, Democrats set a precedent that being untruthful and deceitful is not an impeachable offense if it's about sex.
Right.
And heretofore, I was not aware of the sex exception to perjury laws, but they set that precedent.
Right.
It would be pretty odd then to move against the president who is dishonest and deceitful about sex, which is exactly what this campaign financing is about. But, you know, I mean, you know, politics is known for hypocrisy on all sides, so
that's true.
I fully expect it to happen. But they did set that precedent.
Hey, why don't you do this? We got to go to the bottom of the hour, the top of the hour news break. Can you hang out? I know Killer Bees is going to join us here shortly. Talk with him. We're eating some sandwiches. We're kicking it here politics-wise and comedy-wise at Mobile Bay Coins, 2204 Main Street in Mobile. Come see us, and we'll be right back.